Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Welcome to the Keep Sounding Podcast. This is your Panthers head coach coordinator search edition. This is Brian, joined by John as always. John, how are you doing on this fine evening?
It's a fine evening, Brian.
Good. I'm glad to hear it. So, it's been a lot of just speculation over the last few weeks and people finding their potential candidates they want, you know, the next up-and-coming young head offensive coach, her young head coach, the next Sean McVay. That seemed to be what everybody was targeting. And the Panthers, they got about half of that right. They grabbed Frank Reich, former coach of the Indianapolis Colts, who was unceremoniously fired very early into last season, despite having some pretty successful offenses and seasons. Overall, it sounds like he really wowed the coaches. He walked into the interviews and basically had a really good set plan from what the reports are saying, where he had already interviewed potential candidates in the event he got the job. Very much, it's funny, actually, I remember reading that David Tepper didn't actually tell any of the coaches or people who were in the search who he liked, and they all kind of unanimously agreed on Frank Reich. So, John, what are your thoughts?
It's cool. I think, like, it's one of those things where, like, you know, it's been a week now since the, it's one of those things where, like, I think it's a good hire. His resume, I think a lot of people point to, like, his last, whatever, third of a season he had in Indianapolis. And, like, yeah, see, he was a disaster. Why will he be any better here? It's like, I mean, he was good the majority of the time he was there. The quarterback situation wasn't great, and I guess if you want to say, like, he's partly to blame for it, I guess. But then it becomes what this whole. Well, the thing with that too is, like, I know I've seen stuff that's like with Frank Reich, Scott Fitter gets more control of the roster because, you know, Matt Rhule insisted on having a lot of say in that, and Frank Reich lets other people do other people's jobs, which is cool. So it makes you know, it's like, well, if that's the case, then that was probably the case in Indianapolis. So the whole quarterback situation probably wasn't his fault. Or his idea.
To interject real quick, I just figured while you're mentioning it, there was a lot of whispers online that the GM would not let him draft a quarterback.
Yeah, right. So, like, that's, instead, we're just going to, like, get everybody's cast-offs and see if it works.
Right.
And, like, they almost did. Like, yeah, they were with Philip Rivers. I mean, they did, like, decently with Jacoby Brissett as quarterback. And... they almost made the playoffs with Carson Wentz.
Yeah, Carson Wentz had to fuck that up, but yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard for me to really fault Frank Reich if it's true that he couldn't go get the quarterback he wanted. And allegedly it was because the GM felt that if the quarterback drafted ended up being a bust, he would be the one to get let go. I don't know how substantiated that is. That's just what I read out there on the various forms of media that you can consume NFL news on. But I mean, yeah, he took the Colts to the playoffs in his first year with Philip Rivers I guess that wasn't his first year, because his first year would have been when Andrew Luck retired. So
yeah.
But yeah, then after Jacoby Brissett, they had Philip Rivers, the corpse of Philip Rivers, who was basically already retired before they brought him in. and he made the playoffs with him, and all of his offenses were scored relatively well. So it's, I mean, when you want an offensive-minded head coach and your offense is doing well, I mean, especially when you have meme quarterbacks like Carson Wentz and Matt Ryan, which I know Matt Ryan was fine like 2021, but at this point in his career, I think he's done.
Yeah, so, he had a while where he was on pace to shatter the record for fumbles in a season this year.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just can't even hold the ball anymore. But yeah, it's one of those things where I said this a couple times, like in comments and elsewhere, like I don't know how it's possible to have like a super strong feeling about coach hires, because it's this game of like how much are they to blame or credit for other things in their past situations, and also we don't know the dynamics inside of a building that like contribute to like what makes a coach good or not. So I know it was one of the things that happened a bunch where we were like arguing when Frank Reich was with the Eagles, and the Eagles were really good with him as their offensive coordinator. Like, how much was it Frank Reich's fault, and how much was it Doug Peterson to get the credit? And it's like, people are like arguing about that, and like, this is dumb. We have no way to know. We're just guessing.
Right.
So I don't know. It's one of those things where it's like, there, it's easy enough for me to see the reasoning behind it. So like, I'm cool with it. Kind of my hot take reaction.
No, that's kind of how I feel about it too. Like, it's really hard to have an objective feeling about it. I mean, think about this. Back in 2020, the Panthers hired Matt Rhule, universally praised move.
Yeah, they were like,
yeah, we were pumped. It was the new hot guy out there. Not hot, you know.
Not physically.
Like, not physically. Yeah, he looked like a slob. But everybody was excited about it. There were definitely some, I will give some credit, there were plenty of people out there who were like, why is he bringing in only Temple guys? So
right.
I'll give that props to Frank Reich as well. He's already made some really good moves as far as his supporting staff. But yeah, as you said, it's hard to objectively decide whether or not Frank Reich is going to suck or not for the Panthers. You can really only look at his past success. And aside from the one bad season in Indianapolis, where Indianapolis looked almost more volatile than the Panthers did last year at points.
Yeah.
You know, he's had success in the league. He's clearly a quarterback focused and offensive focused coach. So I don't know. Just give him the chance. I mean, there's two sides to the story, because when you look at someone like, I know Ben Johnson was one that people really wanted from the Lions. You look at that and say, okay, it's the young guy. He might have some new ideas. He might be more plugged in as far as running the offense and stuff. But they're also complete unknowns. You know, for every Sean McVay, there's a Cliff Kingsbury out there, which granted, I believe we mentioned this on the podcast last time. Cliff Kingsbury didn't have any past success anywhere else, so that's not necessarily the best example. But there's always going to be those young head coaches who are just not ready to be a head coach.
Well, it's just, also, it's like being a good offensive coordinator has almost nothing to do with being a head coach.
Right.
Like, obviously, if you keep like play calling duties and stuff, you maintain that aspect of it. But there's so much more day-to-day stuff that goes into being a head coach than being the dude that calls plays. So just being able to like scheme a good offense and call good plays, you know, situationally, does not at all mean you're cut out to be the leader of an entire team.
Right.
I mean, Nathaniel Hackett, and not that he was like super good other places, but like, he was a big, like, he was a good get for the Broncos after being Aaron Rodgers' offensive coordinator. And I think he's generally, maybe not like an elite offensive coordinator, but he's generally regarded as a good offensive coordinator, and was like, just couldn't do the head coach stuff.
Yeah, the Broncos' offense as a whole was horrific.
And right.
Yeah, and we even saw it. We even saw it ourselves with Matt Rhule and Steve Wilks, the very different looking team as far as preparedness and
right
game plans. Like, as much as people are gonna were saying, oh well, the Steve Wilks offense is very simple. Yeah, but they were built to be that way, and Matt Rhule couldn't seem to figure that out.
Yeah.
So like, that was how they constructed the team: strong offensive line, be able to run the football. not make the quarterback have to throw a whole lot. And all of a sudden, when the Panthers let go of Matt Rhule, all of a sudden they were doing the things that they were built to do, at least what we were told they were built to do. So, yeah.
It wasn't like the whole reason that Matt Rhule allegedly fired Joe Brady was because like he didn't run the ball enough.
Right. Yeah, that was pretty much what it was. Which then this year, you know, they still had Baker throwing the ball like 35, 40 times a game. And also just completely feeding Christian McCaffrey and only having Foreman average 1 to 2 yards or 1 to 2 carries per game when he was literally brought in to spell Christian McCaffrey. So yeah, it's personnel decisions.
Yeah,
it's personnel decisions. It's keeping your offensive coordinators in check with whatever game plan you believe to be the best. I mean, the head coach, even if they're not the one calling plays, they're still developing the game plan for the offense that game. And it's the offensive coordinator's job to execute it if they're the one calling the plays. So that's all. But overall, I mean, like you were saying, you can't really objectively feel one type of extreme or another about it yet. But evidence that it's going a lot better than the Matt Rhule era. They hired a hell of a defensive coordinator. Oh, go ahead.
Oh yeah, no, that's what I was gonna get to. Is like, I know one of the things we hired. So it's a good transition because I was gonna say one of the things that I was wondering about was like how much, you know, nepotism or like retreads we were gonna see on Rhule or Reich's staff, because we saw it with every coach we've had before and when they've left. Right, like when we brought Rivera in originally. It was just like he brought basically like all of the Chargers staff with him and a couple people that he worked with on the Eagles were like he yeah. used to fill out his staff. And then Matt Rhule brought in like his college coaching staff with him and some guy. And then like when Ron Rivera left here and he took like almost literally the entire Panthers coaching staff that got him fired with him to Washington.
Right.
And I was like, is Frank Reich going to do the same thing here? And then the first hires that he's made or I guess decisions he's made with the staff are retaining the offensive line and special teams coach from here from last year, which I'm sure he was pressured a little bit to do that. And that was partially from like a front office ownership perspective was like, hey, we really need you to keep these guys. They're good. But you know, he did it. And then going outside of his bubble to hire a defensive coordinator. Like that's reassuring.
I did enjoy that it took him a little bit to decide that with Campen and Tabor as well. Like, so I think he already kind of had them in the plans, but I'm sure he did his little bit of due diligence just to make sure. But right. Yeah, I mean, those were the two guys behind the two most successful groups on the Panthers last year. I mean, the special teams was great. The offensive line was much better than we've seen in probably almost a decade at this point. So yeah, it's definitely encouraging, and I did really, really like them bringing in the guy, Jiro Evero from the Broncos. I'm pretty sure they've crossed paths before, and that's one thing. It's one thing to deal with nepotism, where you're just bringing in the guys that you were coaching with on your last coaching group, but it's another thing to, like, interview someone you cross paths with, like Evero, and bring him in anyway. And Evero, it was his first season as a defensive coordinator for the Broncos, but he's been under a whole lot of different coaching trees. So very successful.
Before that, he was with the Rams with Sean McVay. And I think, I don't know how much it's proven to be true, but it's more true than false, if nothing else. Like everything that Sean McVay touches turns to gold, and all of the coaches on his staff seem to go elsewhere and be fine at worst mm-hmm. so far, unless I'm thinking of missing somebody. But yeah, he was like their secondary or their safeties coach and then got promoted to passing game coordinator. And so like if he's kind of working up the way the Sean McVay tree, which has been working for people, so
right.
It's a good get from that. And then just not that this is good evidence, but like he super highly sought after, right? Like
yeah,
the Broncos wanted to keep him. He's like, I want to go see who else is out there. So they let him out of his contract. And I think like every team that has a defensive coordinator opening wanted to interview him.
Yeah. And he had head coaching aspirations as well.
Right. We interviewed him to be the head coach. Even.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's some good due diligence. And the other guy that we brought in, Deuce Staley. He was the guy I shouted out in my offensive coordinator potential preview as someone where I didn't really know if he would be even be someone that they would consider for offensive coordinator. But I thought based on that background with Frank Reich, he was really good. He was a head coaching candidate with the Eagles for the last several years. Then he went to Detroit with Dan Campbell to potentially become a head coach. Unfortunately, his mom has health issues, so the Lions allowed him to come over and make a lateral transition to be closer to his mom. But great hire there. I'm not sure what he's going to even be doing yet, but
yeah, I was going to say
Staley's been around for a long time as a running backs coach.
I was going to say, we don't even know what his job title is yet, do we?
No, we don't. It's most likely going to be running back / assistant head coach, just like he was at the Lions, but he will be in play for the offensive coordinator position, is what the...
His Wikipedia says Carolina Panthers 2023 to present, TBD. I guess it's, like, job title. Yeah.
They haven't exactly said they just say he's going to have a role, but I know at the very least it's going to be a lateral role, so...
Right, which I get the Lions deserve a huge shout-out for, like, being cool.
Yeah.
Props to Dan Campbell and their organization. Not like, I mean, I'm sure he would have just, like, resigned, but, you know, to just let him do that gracefully.
Cool. Right. Yeah, very cool move. And it's not like his potential to get a head coaching job being in Carolina is any different. I mean, they're going to be rebuilding the offense. They're going to be bringing in a new quarterback. They're probably going to be bringing in another running back of some kind and being more running back focused for any new quarterback they bring in. So that's not a terrible spot for him. I just really based on the fact that the Eagles coaching staff has been extremely good over the last few years and the fact that Eagles fans were sad to see him go, that makes me think it was a good hire. Like, and these are all guys that are not walking in off the streets from a college team or just coming in as, you know, the next step up from like a quarterback's coach or a defensive back's coach. These are guys who have been in the league for a very long time. So,
and had success like at the positions that they're,
yes,
the roles that they're taking on here.
Yep.
Right. Like Deuce Staley, if he does end up being like the running backs coach, assistant head coach, like he was doing that with Detroit and they had one of the best running games in the league. And he kind of, you know, don't know how much to attribute to each person, but Jamal Williams has had like a career renaissance in Detroit year. And then DeAndre Swift is like, he's a highly regarded prospect, but he's been very good. Like the Lions are not supposed to be the offense they were this year.
No, they were high powered as fuck. And that was not at all projected.
Right. So, and obviously Jared Goff gets a lot to do with that. And I don't know how much Deuce Staley, you know, he's not a quarterback's coach or anything like that, but you know, he's
got something to do with it. Yeah.
But yeah, their running game was like a top five or top seven or something unit in the NFL. Yeah. And he does have a lot to do with that. So it's the trend has been so far, it's people that are not necessarily like brand new to him, but they're not like within the immediate bubble like we've seen before. Right. We're like,
right.
Hey, guy, that was my whatever, like quality control coach last year at my job I got fired from. Let's want to do it again. Want to run it back. It's like, let's find people that have had success that we know.
Yeah. Like, hey, Mike Shula, our offensive coordinator got signed to be a head coach. Why don't you just step up from quarterback coach to offensive coordinator? I'm sure you can do it, buddy.
Right. I'd rather not like hires, like go through the trouble of interviewing people I don't know very well. Mm-hmm. Not only you saw what Chud did, right? Just do the same thing.
Mm-hmm. It's just that easy. Here's the playbook from last year. Just do it.
Yeah, just call the plays from this playbook. It can't be that hard.
Yeah, can't be that hard.
Right. So yeah, it's been exciting and nothing else that we're maybe not that we're kind of going outside of the immediate circle to make hires, and they're all like very objectively good, or at least I can say that their resumes are all very, very strong.
Their resumes are very, very strong, and they're people that we're interviewing for jobs elsewhere outside of Carolina as well, which is always a good sign. Yeah,
right. We're not just like, yeah, we're not hiring our buddies that no one else even knows they exist.
Right.
Like Matt Rule's staff, I'm pretty sure he plucked from nowhere in the NFL, right?
Yeah, I mean, Joe Brady might have been someone, but true. Yeah, there's no way that Phil Snow was on anybody's radar as a defensive coordinator. And to his credit, I thought Phil Snow did a great job with the defense despite the pieces he had. So
yeah, it is funny that I guess Joe Brady is probably the one like more league-wide highly sought after candidates that we hired under Rule, and he was the first one to go, basically.
Oh yeah. That's how it works, man.
And then he got picked up to be the quarterback's coach of the Bills, who are a much better run organization than us.
Yeah.
So it's like, maybe we're a little backward on that one.
Yeah. That sounds like Matt Rule. The more I hear about Matt Rule, the more after he's been fired, the less that I enjoy anything about him. So
yeah. I mean, I try. Yeah, it's. I feel like it's human nature, but I've done the same thing, right? Like, you try to be optimistic and like see the silver lining in things, or be optimistic about people's decisions, and then when they're not here anymore and they're not there to defend themselves, or you don't have to like mind like bend your brain to accept what they're doing. It's like, okay, maybe, yeah, it's pretty bad.
Yeah. I mean, that's what we did with like the Sam Darnold trade, for example. We kind of tried to justify it at the time, where in the end it turned out to be the massive massive bust of a deal that many people said it was going to be.
Right. I'll never forget my sister, who I didn't even at the time, like I hadn't realized at the time how much she had gotten into like paying attention to football. And she, like, we were like hanging out and she's like, so why did we trade for Sam Darnold? And I was like, oh, you know, he like, maybe change of scenery. He was highly regarded coming out of college, and we think maybe, you know, he's got a shot to turn around with like a good offense. Like, yeah, but doesn't he suck? Oh. It's like, I mean, I can't say no.
Yeah.
And then, yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of that, before we keep moving on, just a little quick thing. So yeah, Scott Fitterer is a pretty hotly contested subject with Panthers fans right now.
Which is not fair, I don't think.
No.
It's because he got brought on after Matt Rule. So like that wasn't, he had no input into that decision at all. From the I don't know how much has been said like explicitly, but the kind of stuff that you can kind of read through the tea leaves with the stuff about Reich, where it's like, one of the things about Reich is it'll let Fitterer take control of the roster building like he didn't have under Rule and stuff like that, where it's like, I don't know how much, like, obviously Fitterer had a job and was doing things and contributing to all of these things, but it's one of those things, again, I don't know how you can as a from an outsider's perspective accurately determine like the division of labor there, like how much blame and credit everybody gets.
I mean, it's one of those things where after hearing about how Matt Rule was super enamored with Sam Darnold, it's like, okay, I can maybe like give him a pass on that one. And overall, I mean, he's clearly aggressive when it comes to trades, and I just like that in general, just because we've never really had that. But the fact that he's still here does speak to something, I think, because if he was really Matt Rule's little yes man, where he was hired just to kind of like be the GM for Matt Rule, he would have been gone, right?
Oh yeah, for sure, right?
Like, I mean, it's one of those things where we can never really know exactly who is completely responsible for what, but just the fact that David Tepper didn't fire him completely means that there's some faith there,
which I agree with.
And I remember when Scott Fitterer was made our GM, that was another move, which granted, I said this earlier about Matt Rule, but that was another move where everyone was like, oh, that's a great move. Like, you know, remember when they built a juggernaut in Seattle? And so far his drafts haven't been terrible. I mean, they've been decent. You could argue that he had three starter level players in the 2021 NFL draft. This year, one so far, I'd say. Few contributors here and there, but in the end, if they end up getting a quarterback and being successful within the next 2 years, I don't know why you would get rid of Fitterer.
Right, his process is good, right?
Yeah,
like we'll take, like, if we talk about the Sam Darnold thing and like the individual players that may have been his decisions, may have been you know, rule, like, do whatever you have to get my guy. But, like, I remember researching and writing, putting up a thing a few years ago where it was like the idea of a good drafter is a myth. And it showed basically like the cumulative like hit rate that teams were having in the draft. And there was like no correlation year to year on how good teams were drafted relative to where their pick was. Like some teams there were like, no one was consistently good or bad. And then the little bit that was there is like not enough to justify a trend. It's just generally like, if you have a sample size of 32, it just like by numbers, if you do like only have like a sample size of like 20, just by like odds, somebody's going to just get lucky more often than others. So like you'll have somebody that's had like a string of bad luck, somebody will have a string of good luck, but it's not consistent enough to say like, oh, these teams are good at drafting and these teams are bad at drafting. We just kind of have anecdotal evidence based on like who's had more recent success and stuff like that. So a long-winded way of explaining, saying the process is good, right? Like we try to acquire picks. We use like throwaway late round picks to try to get proven players like LaVisca Chenault. And we even use like that to get like Baker Mayfield and stuff like that. And then the idea of like trading down and moving around in the draft to try to get as many picks as possible, as opposed to locking in on guys we think will be good, because that doesn't work.
Right. And I think part of it is just the whole, like the allure of having more draft picks, just because, you know, you might hit on one of them, and that's the name of the game. Like, you know, you want to have more draft picks. It's more chances at the table to hit on something. But I mean, let's just think about this when we talk about the LaVisca Chenault trade, for example. After the third round, the Panthers drafted Brandon Smith, Amari Bono, Cade Mays, and Kilon Barnes. And they traded a sixth round pick, I want to say, for LaVisca Chenault.
Yeah.
So Brandon Smith had a forgettable rookie year. I mean, he's not great in run coverage, and he's super athletic. I'll give him that. Then there's Amari Bono. He had, towards the end of the year, he kind of kicked it on with a little bit of help with the pass rush. Cade Mays seems like he was a good pick at the sixth round. Kilon Barnes is a seventh round pick, and he's nothing for the Panthers. I mean, so it's one of those things.
Who cares?
You could argue that they had a 25% hit rate on someone who is of those four picks after the third round, of someone who was actually like what I would call a solid contributor. And that's what LaVisca Chenault was. And they gave up a sixth round pick for him.
Right. So, and then you got some offensive line depth that seems useful, if nothing else, with Cade Mays. And then, you know, other guys that look like they have a chance to contribute at some point if they're developed properly. Like,
right.
It's not you see plenty of guys get picked in, like even like the third or fourth round, that are cut very quickly, 'cause they're just like immediately apparent that they're not NFL players.
Right. So yeah, it's just one of those things that really irritates me when, like, I understand the CJ Henderson trade annoyed a lot of people because they got rid of a third round pick and they got rid of
Dan Arnold.
Dan Arnold. I was like, I know it's not Sam Darnold.
Dan Arnold to Sam Darnold. Arnold.
Yeah, that was the meme for a little bit. But I understand why they did that. It potentially would have paired CJ Henderson and JC Horn for the foreseeable future as two highly athletic corners. So
Yeah. There's
never going to be a perfect GM. It is what it is. I'm just excited to see how this coaching staff and Scott Fitterer work together going forward, because right now they're making a lot of good decisions.
Right. Yeah. I think one of the things that I think happens, and not just with Panthers fans, but people in general, is like the misses stick, and the home runs will obviously stick too, but the more like more standard, like that worked out, don't live in the memory as much. So Right. Over time you kind of build up this like repository of like all the things that they've messed up massively. And you're like, yeah, this guy's bad. He did this bad thing and this bad thing and this bad thing. And over time that list just gets bigger and bigger. And it's like, I mean, yeah, that's kind of how it works. But I think it's easy to like fixate on those and get like maybe a more negative picture than is actually there.
Yep. Well, when your team's not doing well either.
right,
record wise, that also makes it, that kind of exacerbates things. Like if the Panthers somehow made the playoffs this year, people would probably be bitching a little less about things like the Sam Darnold and Baker Mayfield trades.
Yeah. So. It's also like, it's very frustrating because no one, because you can't like analyze this, but so much of building a good team is just like dumb luck.
Oh, I was actually, it's funny you bring that up. The Eagles are a really good case study on that. I mean, they drafted Jalen Hurts, but he was a backup plan for Carson Wentz.
Right. Like if they liked him so much, they wouldn't have waited till this, if they thought he was going to be who he is, they wouldn't have picked him in the second round. They would have gotten him sooner.
And they were super aggressive with the AJ Brown trade. They went to the Colts and said, hey, we'll give you, or not the Colts, the Titans. We'll give you a first round pick and like 100 something pick for this wide receiver. You don't want to retain that. You don't want to sign to an extension. That could have very easily blown up in their faces.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Same thing with Devontae Smith. They traded up to keep him from the Giants. If Devontae Smith isn't as good as he was, like what if it took him like 3 years to really turn it on? All of a sudden that blows up in your face because you traded away draft capital just to keep him from the Giants. So
right, and to draft a receiver that weighs like 160 pounds and like you could very easily plot out reasons why he would fail at the NFL level.
Like, the Eagles did a lot of smart things, like, for example, getting Dallas Goedert when they still had,
Zach Ertz.
Yeah, Zach Ertz, that's who it was.
You're killing it with the names tonight.
Yeah, I had it in my head. All of a sudden, I started to think of somebody else, and I was like, oh, fuck, that's not him. But yeah, like, they did that when they didn't need to, so very well-run organization, don't get me wrong, but there is a lot of luck when it comes to, and being aggressive is one of those things where if you hit, you look like a genius. If you don't, like with Sam Darnold, you look like an idiot.
Right, but you have to try, and then hope stuff works out. And I don't think stuff not working out over a relatively small sample of a couple of years is enough to be like, well, he's bad. Because even as dumb as it sounds, like obviously there are chances, like patterns will emerge over time, but like the hit rate of like, did this player play as well as we thought they would, a lot of that is just kind of like that one, there's a lot of chance in that, right? That's mm-hmm. And that's what I mean by like following the process. Like if you pick someone that's like super highly productive in college.
Oh, I think your headset just died, buddy.
Super highly productive and like has great measurables and then they don't work. Like, is that your fault for whiffing on that? Like,
right.
What did you do wrong?
Now, as long as I can sit there and look at a decision by a GM and think, I get it. I won't quit on
that's
them.
That's my thing too.
Yeah. So
obviously there comes a time where it's like, I've understood the process, but it's failed every single time that you have to be like, maybe this isn't, you aren't doing a good job, but like if I can see the process and the reasoning's sound, right. Like the results will come eventually. You just gotta kinda have to let them happen.
Yeah, it's pretty much where I'm at with it. I guess last piece is, let's just say, who's your offensive coordinator if you had to pick one?
Ooh,
and I can go first if you want.
Yeah, I'm bad at this.
Mine is my pick in my article about it. Kevin Petullo, the offensive passing coordinator for the Eagles, only because I don't care what anybody says. Like the whole thing with the Eagles offense with Jalen Hurts moving forward and really just turning it on this year, that has to fall at that guy's hands. So I think you surround your quarterback with an offensive coordinator like him, who's young, who's worked with Frank Reich, and Frank Reich, obviously, who is definitely someone who knows how to coach up a quarterback, make them effective. I think that would be huge. I think part of the reason why the offensive coordinator talks have really died down recently is because they're waiting for the Super Bowl to be over. So between him, there's guys like Marcus Brady, who was the offensive coordinator for the Colts in 2021, but he was fired in 2022. He's currently an assistant for the Eagles. So there's a lot of good talent out there on the Eagles, and I think that's kind of where they're like, we want to talk to these people seriously first before we make a decision. So that's kind of where I'm at with it, is I think that the next offensive coordinator will either be one of them or a proven offensive coordinator that we've heard of in the league.
Yeah, but I feel like, if nothing else, we interview – we want to interview Brian Johnson, and we want to interview Marcus Brady and Kevin Petullo, right? Even if they don't end up getting the job. I was looking at something real quick. I was just like pulling up a list just to kind of like give myself some names to pick from. And Parks Frazier, like you were mentioning, if we're talking about the nepotism angle, Frank Reich officiated a wedding ceremony a few years ago.
So give him the job.
So he's got the job.
Yeah. It's his job if he wants it.
Yeah, no, I don't know. Like I said, I'm not good at that stuff because I'm really bad at this whole like media thing because I can't like make hot takes. But so it's one of those things where I'm like, I don't know how to pick like a quarterback's coach that I think will be a good offensive coordinator because I just like, I don't know what he does.
Yeah, no, it's always different too because, you know, you might have the more hands-on quarterback coaches where they're actually like focused on teaching that one quarterback to be better. I mean, Ken Dorsey definitely had a positive effect on Cam Newton's career. But overall, right. I mean, I couldn't tell you what Ken Dorsey did to do that for Cam. So,
yeah,
I 100% agree. I mean, I basically just went on and looked up through Frank Reich's coaching tree to determine these guys. And for all we know, it could just end up being some quarterback's coach for a team that he's never even fucking coached with. So,
which I'd be cool with. Like I said, I kind of like the idea. Knowing full well that if I were in Frank Reich's position, I would definitely like hire my friends. But I appreciate it when coaches don't do that. I feel like it projects more confidence and more competence that they're like, I don't need to hire my friends that I'm comfortable with. I know like I can, I'm hiring good people at their job.
Right. And he's got it's not like he doesn't have anybody. Like he coached with Deuce Staley for quite a while. So he's got some of that, just not all of it.
No, I expect some of it. I mean, I don't think anybody could be like expected to be like, hey, I need you to hire nothing but strangers to like run this.
Yeah, no one, people you have never met before, never talked to, never had drinks with. I want you to hire them and work with them.
Right. And like, and not only that, hire them and work with them, but also like your job security is dependent on their like success at their role under you.
Right.
But it just like I said, seeing the ability to venture out a little bit. So I don't really have a good answer for that, but
that's okay.
I gave out
two names, so we're good.
Yeah, you got my name for me. I think it's going to be one of the Eagles guys, though.
Yeah, I think that just makes the most sense because, especially if Frank Reich is going to retain play calling duties, which by all accounts that appears to be the case, they don't need to get someone who's ready to step in and call plays day one. So that's where they can, that person can focus more on the overall game plan, getting people prepared, help like talking with guys and like making adjustments throughout the game and relaying what he sees to Frank Reich. So that's something where a guy, like I was saying, like Kevin Petullo, where he's the offensive passing game coordinator for the Eagles, it's not necessarily a huge step up from what he's already doing. He probably just gets paid a little more for it. So, yeah. So that's how I feel.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was gonna say I'm interested in like the Parks Frazier like kind of come up, and then I would be interested to see from someone who is better with like X's and O's and stuff about what he did as an offensive coordinator when he was thrown to the fire, where the Colts were like, hey, our interim head coach is a guy that worked on TV and has never coached at any level ever, and also no one on the staff has ever called plays before. So Parks, you're up.
Right.
And they like, I don't know. So I don't know like how successful they were. And I didn't watch Colts games for whatever reason, but I feel like I would be enthusiastic about him as a like an offensive coordinator and a competent coaching staff. If he was able to like, you know, succeed relative to expectations with the Colts, given the dumpster fire that they were.
Yeah. I don't know about him, but we'll see. He was
I don't think it's possible to know about him because there's no way to judge him based on like the success of the offense that he had because of like the stuff I just said. But I think it says a lot about his like adaptability and preparedness if you know, if you can look at the Colts offense and be like, I can't even tell that they're run by someone who has no, like, no play calling experience and no one on the staff to help him with anything like that.
Yeah. yeah.
So, and like, if he's able to like do that role decently well, it's like, this guy might have, so there might be something there if this guy is like, has a better support system.
Mm-hmm. I think Marcus Brady would be the pick before him, just because Marcus Brady was the one who was fired that freed up that position. But I'd certainly be intrigued by it. I'll give you that.
Right.
So, but anything else on that front you'd like to touch on?
No.
You ready?
Showtime. On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I just wanted to give one last shout out. Steve Wilks got himself the 49ers defensive coordinator position, which, props to him. He definitely deserves that promotion to at least defensive coordinator. Kind of wish he had gotten a head coaching job, but I hope he gets the chance with the 49ers to do well. DeMeco Ryans was the defensive coordinator for the 49ers. He is now the head coach of the Houston Texans. So definitely a spot where Steve Wilks can shine and get himself into really good position for the head coaching jobs that inevitably open next year.
Yep. I mean, the last two 49ers defensive coordinators are head coaches elsewhere now. I don't know about DeMeco Ryan's success yet, obviously, but Robert Saleh's done really well with the Jets. So he definitely, like, I'm happy he landed on his feet, and I'm happy he ended up in a situation that's stable that he can, like, use as a jumping off point to hopefully get a head coaching job somewhere.
Yeah, maybe it's even with the Panthers. Who knows? A couple years down the line.
What a plot twist that would be.
That would be hilarious.
4 years later.
Yeah.
He's like, hey, Steve, you want to come back again for real this time as the head coach?
Yeah. Frank Reich retired, Steve. We need you back.
Oh, what a story that would be.
Yeah. A true coming-of-age story. But, yeah. If that's all we have for today, then...
Who's your Super Bowl pick?
Oh, Super Bowl. Oh, God. I really don't want to do this, but I think the Eagles are going to win.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They
they're really good. They just are.
They are good. The Eagles, hot take, the Eagles, who've only lost one game with their quarterback healthy, are really good.
Well, they remind me a lot of the 2015 Panthers, except the fact they have a lot. They have two extremely good wide receivers, and they have a very good tight end. On top of having a really good offensive line and on top of having a really good defense, like, that Eagles team can put up like 200 yards rushing in a game and still have Jalen Hurts score twice in the air. So,
yeah.
Or three times. So they can beat you everywhere, and they are very much a team where they will beat up a defense. So, I mean, they're just so well constructed. If anybody can beat them, obviously Pat Mahomes and Andy Reid could. But I just kind of expect the Eagles to beat the piss out of them.
Yeah, the only thing I'm thinking is, like, Andy Reid's record after a bye is, like, absurd. And, you know, Super Bowl. I know he's lost the Super Bowl a couple times, so, like, that kind of falls apart when you narrow it down.
I was
going to
say,
yeah.
The last time he was in the Super Bowl. The last time he was in the Super Bowl, he lost after the bye.
Yeah, he's, like, 1-2 in the Super Bowl. But still,
something like that. Yeah,
that's a small sample, and also, like, it's the Super Bowl. Like, your record's not going to be like stellar. It should be like, because, you know, it's the best you're playing. It's the best team in the league, other than yours. If you pick the Eagles, I'll take the Chiefs.
I hope you're right.
Me too.
It'll be miserable in my area for like a week after they lose, because then the Eagles fans will be bitching constantly about it. But after that, I'll have a nice smooth sailing into the 2023 regular season, because I won't have to listen to the Eagles fans talk about how they won. There's far fewer Chiefs fans than Eagles fans where I live.
You don't say.
Yeah, in the Lancaster, PA area, which is only an hour and a half stone's throw from Philly. Yep.
Shocking.
Yeah. There are Chiefs fans here, though. I have seen them. I question it a lot, but I have seen them. Yeah.
There's Chiefs fans everywhere.
Yeah.
They travel. And also, like, if you were, like, a casual Chiefs fan before, you're, like, definitely wearing the colors with pride right now and for the foreseeable future. It's one of those things where, like, you know, when the teams are bad, the fans kind of go dormant. And if you're a Chiefs fan, like, you're not dormant.
No, definitely not. And you have the added benefit of pissing off all the Eagles fans if Andy Reid beats them, because a lot of them really dislike Andy Reid. So,
which is super Philadelphia, because like he made them relevant when they haven't been much.
They hate
that.
Everybody, John. That's just how they are.
Like the Eagles were largely, other than like, you know, unless I'm being way off, but like Andy Reid is like by far the best thing that ever happened to the Eagles, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's just fitting for them. I'll leave it with this last bit. There was a video that went viral on the internet of Jerry Rice popping up in the 49ers Eagles game, just on the sideline, and Eagles fans booed the shit out of him. I'm sitting there, how do you boo Jerry Rice? What has he ever done? Like, nope, that's just their nature. They hate everything. They hate you, they hate your existence, and they hate everyone around you if you're not an Eagles fan. And they even hate each other. Very interesting.
And it's crazy. I was wrong. They were good before Reed, too, for a little bit. Like, they've been generally good, other than, like, the 60s and 70s. So it's like, they should be just, like, pretty happy in general, like, normal.
They live in Philadelphia, that's why.
I guess that's the problem.
Yeah. City of brotherly love, where we hate everyone.
Yeah. like Chip Kelly was like the worst thing that ever happened to like the franchise, and he was 27 and 21 as a coach. Like, he had a winning record as a coach, and they're like, this guy is human garbage, get him out of here.
He needs to be stabbed, he needs to be thrown into a dumpster. Yep. Meanwhile, we just had to suffer through the Matt Rhule era, which was much worse.
Right.
Oh, man. Well, any other points you'd like to throw in there about the Super Bowl, John?
Nope, that's it.
Oh, also, good luck to... Damn it, now I can't think of his name. I just had it.
You're on fire with the names.
Shit. Defensive end.
Brian Burns?
No, the other one that we had from 2021. Why can't I think?
Peter Grossmatos?
No, the one that went to the Eagles from us.
Oh, Hassan Reddick.
Hassan Reddick. There we go. I was like struggling with it. Yeah, Hassan Reddick. That's who we're good. That's the only person that I'll root for on the Eagles is Hassan Reddick. Actually, James Bradbury is on the team too. So go those two. But other than that, if they lose, I don't care. Anyway, from all of us here at the Keep Sounding podcast, we'll be in touch when the Panthers find their offensive coordinator, and we'll be in touch as free agency and the draft ensues. Stay safe, stay healthy, stay tuned. We'll talk to you soon.